Perhaps you have seen either a video or in a zoo or the jungles, a monkey with long arms gracefully swinging from one branch to another. And some of the graceful swinging would be really fun to do, high above the ground, propelled like a child on a swing, forward, reaching out for the next branch. Whoosh, whoosh. And perhaps that'd be nice for four or five swings. But then you have to keep doing it. And doing it. And doing it. And it turns out, like you wonder, when does it stop? Nope, it doesn't stop. But my arms are tired. It doesn't stop. But it's not good for me. But it doesn't stop. Keep swinging, grabbing. The Buddha likened consciousness, knowing, perception, this act of knowing things at the moment, to monkeys swinging. As soon as they grab one branch, they're already reaching forward to grab the next one. And so there's momentum in consciousness. Consciousness is kind of like searching or wanting or grabbing. And so that can happen. It's not inherent to awareness, to knowing, to perception. Perceptions of knowing of the eyes, knowings of the ears, knowings of the tongue, the nose, the body, of the mind. But it's also common enough that there's a momentum. We're searching, we're wanting something, we're reaching. You could ask the question, what is awareness? What is knowing searching for? What is it? What does it want? Because the drive for what to get something, some understanding, some desire, what can be what we're afraid of, searching for it, trying to avoid it. The what can be understanding. There's something for me to understand. If I understand, then something good will happen. So this, the perceptions in the mind, the wanting to know in the mind, is searching, looking, wanting, trying to reach the next thing, the next thing. Trying to answer the question, why? Why did that happen? Why should? Or how? How do I do this? What's the way? And then occasionally there are these wise monkeys or humans who figure out that you don't have to always be swinging and grabbing and swinging and grabbing. It's possible to just sit on one of the branches and look around, content, happy, just there. So it's possible for our perceptions to not be propelled to search, to want, to have. Many times it's with our thinking. We're searching for something, trying to figure something out. And the mental formations, the generative thinking, the constructive fabrications of the mind. But its stories, its ideas, and its analysis, and its judgments, opinions, they're intimately connected to what drives perception and knowing to try to figure things out, to grab the next thing, the next thing. And what this? What about this? Maybe this one. And sometimes the thinking mind is just spinning. Spinning and spinning in circles, churning. Maybe it's thinking more or less the same thing over and over again. And for the Buddha, a wise person, there's a possibility of stilling these fabrications, quieting the proliferation, calming the generative thinking. We didn't come with a manual, human being manual, that said, thou shalt always be thinking nonstop, churning away. The Buddha wrote the manual. The manual would be, it's possible to pacify this, to quiet this thinking mind down. Distilling of the fabrications. There might still be thinking, but maybe it's not generative, maybe it's not onward leading. You know the clown in the circus that's trying to pick up a ball. Every time it bends down to pick up the ball, it kicks it forward a little bit, out of reach. So then it goes forward to pick it up and it kicks it out of reach. It's supposed to be funny. Except that maybe it's way too familiar. This thinking that's trying to figure something out, trying to make up a good story, trying to. And somehow we never quite reach the ball. It's always a little out of reach. I have no memory what the resolution is for the clown. I hope there's one. Imagine the mind peaceful. Imagine the mind not inclined to desires, aversions, wanting. The mind not driving our capacity to perceive, to know, to be conscious, to always searching to the next branch, just here. Sitting peacefully on your branch. There's still lots to see in the jungle. But no need to be grabbing. And so these fabrications, the generative thinking that we have, can be seen as arising from the ideas that we have, the concepts we have of what's happening in our experience, what's happening, or just concepts. And this is a third aggregate, the aggregate of, I like to think of it as recognition. One of the reasons I like recognition is it has the re in the front. Cognizing again, recognizing. And it requires some, as Andrea said, some memory to recognize something as what you learned before, what it is. But our recognitions or cognizing isn't necessarily accurate. Andrea talked about seeing the cat in the root of the tree. Probably all of you have some kind of experience like that. Probably once a year I see a snake on the trails. Then it's just a little thin root of a tree just breaking the surface, kind of winding like a snake, and I pull away only to see that it's a branch. In Thailand once, I once stepped on what I thought was a really big 6-7 foot branch across the whole dirt path in the jungle. And to my surprise, it was a snake. It works the other way too. And boy, did I jump. It's interesting to think of colors, our recognizing of colors. If I evoke the color blue for you, those of you maybe who visualize easily, maybe see a blue. Maybe if you don't visualize, maybe you have a reference, a memory of something that's blue. Blue. But are we all seeing, all thinking about the same color blue when I evoke the color blue? Some of you, it might be indigo. Some of you, it might be aquamarine. The concept of blue that we have might be distinct from the blue we're actually seeing. So we're capable of having this idea without seeing something. If someone says, oh, there's a blue. We have new plates in the dining room, they're blue. So you go, you're curious to see, but it turns out it's a very different blue than you thought. So that's a kind of an innocent, simple idea. But what it means, we can bring along, we can have ideas of how things are, which is actually not how they are. And we can live in those ideas. And and socially, it's often referred to as projections. We have ideas that we project onto people. And so sometimes the projections are, you know, maybe accurate enough. But sometimes they're completely inaccurate. I've seen people who look like someone I knew I could feel this inner reactivity or inner evoke, something that was evoked inside of me, and a way of seeing them, attitude towards them, that was conditioned about the person I knew a long time ago, because they look like that. Somehow my instincts were such that, oh, maybe it's like that. We can have ideas, opinions, simple things, but all kinds of things that prove maybe not to be quite accurate or wildly inaccurate. The Buddha's talked about three projections that people commonly make onto reality. The idea of some kind of permanence, that things somehow are have a constancy to them. They're just there, even if they're not, we know they're not permanent forever. But for now, there's a constancy. And I think I relate to very sometimes very subconsciously, you know, I know better. I know that everything's changing and impermanent. But emotionally, somehow or subconsciously, it's like almost like the weight of it is, oh, it's as if this is forever. Oh, this is it. That story I like to tell of having a very hard day with my child when he was really small, and my wife and I were kind of hovering over him, and she looked at me and said, "We're having one of those kinds of days." As soon as she said that, my illusion of permanence puffed, like she popped a bubble. Oh, it's just this one of those, just this kind of day. But somehow I was just like the weight of it was like, oh, this is it. This is it. Remember as when Yeltsin was a little baby, he just couldn't turn, he couldn't turn over at all. And he was kind of flailing his hands in the air. And it was clear he had no coordination of hands and fingers or anything. And I looked at that and said, he's never going to be coordinated. It's too big of a challenge. How's that going to work? How is he going to figure that out? Once had it when I was about 20 or so. I had a pretty nice summer one summer, and I came to the conclusion I'll never be depressed again. And that fall, I was more depressed than I'd ever been. So this never, always, this is how it is. Other projection that the Buddha talked about is a projection that things are happy, things are good, things are wonderful, that have some kind of unreliability. Things are reliable, they're not reliable. Things are will bring happiness that don't really bring some deep happiness. So one of those, for example, we know pretty know most of us know about is pleasure. Some people pursue pleasure, but pleasures are often, you know, they say sometimes they're skin deep, which to me is a very evocative idea, because the happiness that is more lasting and more valuable is kind of embodied, it's like in the heart almost, or it's really much deeper than just the skin. Not of the senses, just you know, I can get all kinds of pleasant sensual experiences, but if we pursue that too much, it can lead to a hollow life, because it'd actually be disconnected from deeper connection to oneself. And it's that deeper connection, that wellspring of fullness, the wellsprings peace, happiness, freedom, compassion, love, These things that are emergent from within that can't be pasted on the top from the outside. And then there's the projection of self. Having the idea there is a self, some kind of lasting, constant thing, something that's in charge, something that can always be in charge, always will be there for us. So the Buddha says that these are not accurate perceptions. They're upside down, topsy-turvy projections. They're backwards or reverse from how things really are. Rather, there's the perceptions, the recognitions, is to the when perception, consciousness, knowing has gotten quiet enough. That's no longer spinning, grabbing, wanting. Then I can start seeing more deeply. You know, if you take a fire wand in the dark and spin it around in a big circle, it looks like a continuous circle of light. But we know that the light is only in one place at a time. It's just that the eye constructs. Maintains the image somehow, so it looks continuous. Like a movie on a movie screen, we look like there's motion there. It looks like it's continuous motion, but literally it's a lot of still shots that the mind constructs into movement that fills in the blanks that looks like there's movement. So the idea of self, we can get the idea of continuity of a self, but it's a little bit the things are going so fast or so much is going on that it's spinning. So this spinning, you know, mental fabrications that go on, this the grabbing one branch to the next branch, and after a while it just seems like there's just one grabbing all the time. All there is grabbing. And so the grabbing is proof of something constant. The grabbing that is that is maybe, oh, that's where the self resides. Sometimes it's the coagulation, the densification, accumulation of pressure, tension, wanting, energies that it starts feeling like that is the core, that's the constant, that's the where I am, the feeling of I am is. It's always with me, always here. And that's why no longer grabbing at everything and wanting and doing calmings down the mental fabrications. It allows the mind to begin to see in a new way. And one of the new ways is to see that actually, moment to moment, the perceptions we have, the knowings we have, the direct knowing, unmediated by the stories, are in constant changing. There's a wonderful story. I like it. I think it's sutta humor. But maybe there is such a thing. And my image of it is this story is about a bunch of monastics and the Buddha sitting around a campfire, kind of. It doesn't say that, but that's my image. And they're just telling one yarn after another, like trying to outdo each other with some great yarn, a great thing. And each one says something, and then they laugh. And they are miracle stories of the Buddha's birth. Let me tell you, when the Buddha was conceived, there was earthquakes throughout the cosmos and glorious light show that shone into the corners of the universe and the darkest corners lit up. When the Buddha was born, he walked, he immediately walked and he talked. So they were doing all these, glorious kind of miracle stories. And then at the end, the Buddha says, "Oh, let me tell you a miracle. Let me tell you what's really miraculous." When I have a feeling tone, pleasant, neutral, I know that it arises. I know that it persists, and I know that it passes. When I have a moment of recognition or recognition, I know that it arises, it persists, and then it passes. When I have a thought, I know that it appears, it persists, and then it passes. So the beginning of this sutta, it's setting up all these miraculous, high-level miracle stories. Kind of setting up the audience to make this dramatic point and contrast something that's easy to overlook. Something that says, this can't be really a great spiritual thing. This can't count. What? This is the great insight? This is like what I'm sitting, 2 weeks at IRC, and all I had to tell them, they go home and tell at parties. What happened to you? What did you get from that? And oh, it was really great. I saw feelings arise, and I saw them pass. Had these moments of recognition there, and then they were not there. And the most amazing of all was I saw my thoughts come and I saw them go. And people look at you. Maybe they'll take your temperature. What? I'm sorry. I was swinging from branches, they say. Really good swings. The branches were special. The best ones. Oh, branches, you say. Oh, I forgot about the branches. I forgot about the swinging. I was too peaceful. So this insight of seeing that a moment of recognition, seeing something, being conscious of something for the moment in which it appears, perceiving it, seeing that it comes and it goes, is actually very helpful to loosen up the grip that wants to grab and hold on, because there's nothing to hold on to. The river of change, things coming and going. So you can see that there's a sound. The idea is you're listening to me speak. So if you are, if you're not, then what I'm saying doesn't matter. If you are, you hear my voice sometimes. My words, they come. They go. They're here for a moment, and then they're not there. Each word in the sentence comes and goes. But usually, when we're talking fast, you don't even notice it at all. It's just one big thing, right? What about all the things that you recognize, all the things that you perceive, the experience of breathing if you meditate? If you're just relating to breathing as breathing, maybe you're not really connecting to it and feeling it and knowing breathing for itself. It's like blue. Is it indigo or is it aquamarine or what is it? Breathing, just, oh yeah. The teacher says, what was your experience of breathing like in meditation? Oh, I was breathing. What is there to report? I was just breathing. There's a richness, there's of sensations and phenomena that you can perceive as you breathe. The changing river of sensations in the chest and the belly and the nostril and the whole body, the shifting and changing sensations, the river, the flowing by of sensations of pressure and expansion and release and contraction and filling and emptying and tingling and pulsing, temperature, and all kinds of things come into play as we breathe. And as you get closer and closer to that, breathing doesn't become just breathing, it becomes this play of sensations. And we can recognize, not the abstract idea of breathing, but rather the particularities that are going on. And then we might notice, as we get simpler and quieter in the details of breathing, it might make it easier to notice how we get pulled into the world of thinking. So we have maybe the breathing feels, the inhale feels smooth and continuous and expansive and stretching of the rib cage, the belly expands. You feel all these things. But then the exhale is jerky, not small, and a little bit rough. And then the mind says, wow, that's not how you're supposed to exhale in California, spiritual California. It's that also supposed to be smooth and wonderful. And what was wrong with me? And maybe I need to kind of adjust what Probably there's some, probably, what could I do about my breathing? And it probably has to do with diet and maybe mushrooms. That's the solution. Then I'll get everything in order. And in the meantime, you've missed like a whole series of breaths. Remember, you were doing the in-breath and out-breath. And because of your trouble with the exhale, you're starting going off from this papancha, wondering where you can buy mushrooms. As opposed to, it's just a jerky, uncomfortable exhale, and okay, to recognize it for what it is. But as we recognize, the recognition is momentary. The recognitions are a lot of different momentary recognitions. It's fascinating to watch how the mind knows something. You might feel that things are like, boy, my knee just hurts all the time. That's just, it's constant. Maybe it is, but we're aware of the knee hurting. And then there's a sound outside. And for that moment, you weren't aware of the knee, just the sound. Then you're back to the hurting knee. And then you smell something, food coming up from the kitchen. Oh, that looks like a nice lunch. Back to this knee. And then you remember something. I don't think I paid my taxes and it's May. That takes you away from the knee for a few seconds more. And And then you remember because you're loyal to your pain, so you're sure to come back to it. And so because you keep coming back to it, it just seems like it's constant. But to watch kind of the fickleness of the mind, moves and comes around at this moment and that moment, and sometimes it settles down and stays with the breathing or stays present for something, but start noticing the changing. And at some point, it becomes a little bit like watching a river. I love watching rivers or watching the ocean, the waves coming and going, or sitting at the edge of a river and just watching the flow. I mean, conventionally, it's pretty boring. I mean, nothing's going on. It's just a lot of waves rippling across down the river, the current, and we're watching a fire, right? And just a fire. I mean, I've seen a fire before. I've seen one, seen them all, right? But it's so relaxing to sit and watch the shifting, changing shapes and movements. So relaxing to sit there and just watch the water flow by, flow by. And Andrea talked about Bhattacharya seeing the flowing, water from or foot washing water flowing down. And I can feel very peaceful and relieved, and nothing needs to happen. It's kind of like the mind. There's something about the eyes watching the waves wash up and down off the beach, or watching the little wavelets on the current on the river going by, that keeps the eyes relaxed. They can't fixate. They're not grabbed onto a branch and never let go. And this idea of watching something move and flow and change, there's a way that that can help something inside of us begin to relax and soften and not be gripped, not be holding on, not be driven. Just watch the changing nature, whether it's the breathing or body sensations or sounds or just a combination of all the senses open to all the shifting, changing nature of it. And that loosening of the grip, then, that loosening of the fixation, of the resistance, of the tightness, the grabbing, the clinging. And it's possible to see how, as soon as we start clinging again, we are removing ourselves from the flow, the river of time, the river of how things are constantly changing in the moment. It's fascinating to watch that. I was there in the river of time as everything was flowing through this present moment. And then I pulled away into an eddy or back up on the shore, no longer in the current. Then pretty soon, not only are we up on the shore, but we're on the jungle. We're swinging again from branch to branch. And to watch that movement, see how that works, how we get lost and preoccupied, and how we cling. And then, but also to recognize when we don't cling. In the way that this morning, the instruction was to notice non-clinging and what that non-clinging experience is like. The Buddha said that the healthy, more or less said, the healthy recognitions are to see things as changing, as unsatisfactory for purpose of clinging, as not self, not take anything as a self. But he also said that one of the healthy recognitions, and to recognize and take in, let it register deeply, is the experience of peace. Is the experience of non-clinging. Is the experience of non entanglement. The stilling of the fabrications. The quieting of our attachments. And I venture to guess that at any given moment, there are a lot more things you're not attached to than what you're attached to. Isn't that amazing? Probably it's the ratio, the proportional distinction is huge in favor of all the things you're not attached to. What would happen if you kind of weren't so loyal or so committed to your attachments and realized maybe there's more non-clinging here going on all the time? Maybe you can kind of look around and what am I not clinging to right now? When I ask myself that question, I'm not clinging to the floor. But I like it's nice to have my mind roam, my eyes roam, and just like looking at a river, just kind of roam around and look at it. Is it realistic to appreciate what you're not clinging to? Or is it really realistic to always notice that you are clinging it, just like our loyalty to clinging is phenomenal. I'd like to suggest your clinging is not loyal to you. So it's kind of like not a good deal. It's a one-way relationship. So to be able to see that these that recognitions are momentary or short. And you know, and maybe kind of just watch the river, the flowing by of this recognition and that recognition, not chasing them, not swinging from one to the next and grabbing, but rather sitting on the bench quietly. In whatever reasonable way you can sit quietly, some modicum of quiet, just watch the river of different things being recognized. And you might notice that the sensation that you have is a little different from the recognition, one of the forms of wisdom that Andrea's teacher talked about. There's the mind's act of recognition, and there is the, you know, the sensation, the sight object, the hearing object, the thought object that happens, and then there's the recognition. Oh, that's what's happening. There's thinking. And the reason why, one of the reasons it's very helpful to see that distinction is that when they're not distinct, and the two are become one, it supports the idea of permanence or constancy, of solidity. Because ideas, platonic ideas, kind of don't change much. And so when the idea of something and the experience of something come together, the things get a little bit sticky. But if they're seen as being two distinct events, I put my hands together, palms flat together, and the pressure I feel is in my hands. The knowing it's pressure is an act of recognition. So I can tell you, I have the word for it, pressure. The warmth I feel in my contact, recognition of warmth. And to see those as two distinct things makes it easier to see that each is coming and going, appears and disappears. That there's a changing, the way we perceive it, the way we're present for it, the way it appears to us is much more fluid than we often realize. And then to watch that fluidity, to watch how things are changing, is one of the gifts of this practice. That comes with really resting or staying present here, here and now, to this experience now. The river of time as it flows through the present moment. What's that experience that flows in and appears and flows out, disappears here? Can you allow things to appear? Can you allow them to just come? Can you allow things to go? Can you allow them to persist for a while, even if they stay for a while? Just one of those moments, just one of those days, just like that, this is how it is now. Can you know, recognize, feel, sense, without any clinging, without grabbing anything? And you can. I'm confident you all can do it. You do it all the time. Already. Maybe you can appreciate how you already do it in all kinds of small ways. So that maybe you can begin loosening up that strong habit of grabbing for the next branch as soon as you've got, as soon as you grab one branch, you're already grabbing for the next one. Sitting on your branch, watching the river go by. So thank you. And maybe as you continue your practice, you can stay close to your ability to see the changing nature, the changing inconstant experience of recognition, all the things you recognize moment by moment, in such a way that it's restful for your mind. You're not chasing and looking, but just restful recognition of the moment. Thank you.